Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. One of our most prolific comedians, Kathy Griffin, occupies a space all her own in the entertainment world, from her sold-out stage shows to television appearances to books and albums. A two-time Emmy winner who's appeared in projects as varied as Seinfeld, Pulp Fiction, Suddenly Susan, and the reality series My Life on the D-List, Griffin finally won her first Grammy for Best Comedy Album this year. She's also a New York Times best-selling author, gay rights activist, and frequent talk show guest whose brushes with celebrities and the celebrity fringe have resonated with audiences across the country. Kathy Griffin will be in our region Saturday, April 12th at 8 p.m. at Proctor's in Schenectady. It's my pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable, and I understand you brought someone with you.
Ian, I have a special guest. American treasure, my 93-year-old mother, Maggie, is here with me. Maggie, say hi to Ian and all of Schenectady.
Hello to Ian and every bit of Schenectady.
Every bit, Ian, not just the nice neighborhoods. Every single bit of Schenectady. Mom, have you ever been to Schenectady?
No, I haven't, but I've heard it's very lovely.
That sounds like a falsehood. What have you even heard about Schenectady?
I think there's a great school in Schenectady.
Ian, is there a great school in Schenectady?
Well, sure. Union College comes to mind. And
Mom, are you referring to Union College?
No, I thought it was a little different name, but it escapes me right now.
Okay. Ian and all of Schenectady, welcome to my world. This is what it's like having a conversation with a woman halfway through a box of Franzia. That would be boxed wine, and I'm just going to say it proudly, because at 93, why the heck not?
Your mom has been such a big part of your career, but I didn't know she was going to be on the show today.
It's a special treat. Look, my mother is like a unicorn. When you can grab her, she's very Hollywood, Ian, okay? She doesn't always do interviews. So when you can grab her, you just got to grab her.
See, I thought the get was having Kathy Griffin on the show, but
no, the get is Maggie, because it's kind of like when you're watching, like, maybe the Grammys, and at the very end, you didn't know that Barbra Streisand was going to come out, and then she comes out, and the LGBTs and I all faint. That's what it's like for you, Ian. I assume this has got to be the pinnacle of your career.
Well, it's pretty close as far as broadcasting goes, I have to say.
Exactly. Hopefully your life and everyone over there at Union College.
I love the fact that you hang out with your mom so much. I mean, you've talked about it a lot.
Let me tell you something. At 93, they have a lot to say. So I have a joke in my act, which is I am bored by anybody under 80. I'm friends with Gloria Vanderbilt. I enjoy the, vivacious seniors, because they've got stories. Like, what I love about older people is they'll just drop things like, well, the thing about World War One was, and then you go, oh, that's right, you were there. So I do enjoy story time with Maggie or anyone of a certain age.
Have you learned anything about how you hope to be as an older person from your mom?
I've learned a little too much about how I should be. First of all, my mom needs to be like an anatomy study, because how she has lived on like 7-Eleven burritos and cheese whiz and boxed wine, and she's in amazing health. I mean, she watches Judge Judy religiously and thinks Judge Judy is on the Supreme Court, so just be cool and go with me on that. And the other night, I went to her apartment, and Mom, did I or did I not catch you watching the Kardashians?
Well, that was just by mistake, almost.
Okay, Ian, you see what I'm going through?
That's what everybody says.
That's what everybody says.
Oh, really?
Well, she's concerned about if Bruce Jenner is transitioning, which I support, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying Bruce Jenner, you know, has an appearance that seems to be different than it used to be, and that's all I'm saying, and I say it without judgment.
Did you get your interest in celebrity culture from your mom, or did you bring that to her?
No, I actually got it from her, because when I was growing up in Forest Park, Illinois, there was a magazine called Rona Barrett's Hollywood. And my mom always had, I think it was a monthly, and Rona Barrett, who's still with us, had like this short sort of streaked haircut. And my mom would say, oh, I wish I could have hair like Rona Barrett. And so we always grew up as movie fans, a part of a large Irish Catholic family. and always kind of obsessed with celebrity culture and movies and, you know, I mean, that's when celebrity culture was sort of more artistic. Now it's the kind of, you know, now it's watching Justin Bieber, like, urinate in a cell somewhere. But I did grow up with an interest, let's just say an interest in the arts.
What happened when she started seeing you on TV? That must have been awesome.
Well, you know what's funny is the first few years of my career, I kept doing jobs that didn't, you know, end up on television. So my mom and when my dad was alive, they would visit me on the set of like an AFI student film or a USC student film. And there were like years when they would say, well, can we ever tell the relatives? And then I think my first guest spot was like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or something. And they could finally say, oh, you can actually tune in and see Kathleen on television. And one of my favorite things about my career has been bringing my mom to the set. And so I have all these great pictures of when I was on ER and my mom and dad got to meet George Clooney. And, you know, over the years, of course, when I was on Seinfeld, they got to meet Jerry Seinfeld. And it's really touching to me to this day. Some of the biggest stars you'll ever heard of will say, how is your mom doing?
It's one of the first things I thought about when I was preparing for this interview was that relationship, because A, she's hilarious, and B, you've brought her around a lot.
Well, yeah, because, you know, she really is kind of amazing, because I'm fascinated by people that are unintentionally funny. So a big part of my act is observing folks like that, and that really is why I make fun of people like Oprah, because Oprah is so all-powerful, and I actually am a giant admirer of hers. But she also is funny to me because I don't think Oprah gets what is funny about Oprah. And I don't think my mom gets why she's funny. She just says things that are funny, and she doesn't even know why. So one of my favorite things is to poke fun at people in the news, whether it's a politician, you know, Sarah Palin saying that President Obama shouldn't be wearing mom jeans. I mean, Sarah Palin doesn't even know why that's funny. She thinks she's making, like, a dig, but it really just makes her look like a buffoon, and that's where I come in, and that's where I do the Lord's work.
If your mom is unintentionally funny, where did you get your intentional humor skills from?
I really think I got that from my dad, because what was interesting is my dad was the type of guy that could be funny on cue. Like, he could really tell a joke or a story and kind of know sort of like when to hit the punchline. And my mom was the perfect balance, because she would just say things, you know, like she would just go on a rant about Judge Judy and how she wants to, you know, move in with Judge Judy. And if only Judge Judy could be in everyone's life, there would be no war. Like, these sort of rants. So when you put those two things together, those two influences, then that's kind of, I mean, I'm definitely just a product of the two of them. And also my siblings are very funny as well. And in our house, it was all about reading the newspaper and coming to the dinner table and trying to discuss and lovingly debate all kinds of topics.
Can you get her hooked up with Judge Judy?
Yes. In fact, she was actually supposed to go see Judge Judy today. But Judge Judy was only available in the morning, and my mom doesn't like to get up early. So that's what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with Judge Judy, who's, you know, probably, by the way, can buy and sell Oprah. And she said, I would love your mom to come visit me on set. And then my mom said, oh, I just love her, but tell her I don't like to get up early.
But it's a court. It's it starts early, right?
Well, I guess so, but I'm just saying, for me, if Judge Judy, and by the way, the invite wasn't for me, I want to be clear. It wasn't Judy saying, I'd like to see Kathy. It was Judy saying, I'd love to see Maggie. And, you know, if Judy wanted to see me at 4 in the morning, I would get my butt up and get there. But Maggie just said, well, just can you tell Judy to do it in the afternoon? And by the way, she doesn't even know her.
And that didn't happen, obviously.
No, apparently now Judge Judy has to work around my mother's schedule. And my mother's schedule is watching Fox News and reruns of Murder, She Wrote.
It's funny, because if your mother had gone to Judge Judy, you know, with a case, like if she were a defendant or a plaintiff, I'm sure the reaction to I don't want to be there on time would have been a lot harsher.
Look, Ian, don't encourage her. I feel like she accidentally overheard you say that, and now she's going to want to take me to court for something. And thank God the limit on Judge Judy, I think, is $5,000. Is that the limit on a case for Judge Judy?
I have no idea.
What do you mean? You watch it every day.
Yeah, but I don't know what she gets paid.
No, I mean, if you have a case and you take it to Judge Judy,
oh,
is there...
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I honestly don't know, Kath. I just listen to the cases. I don't go into the money part or anything.
Well, you would be a terrible juror.
I would be an awful juror, I admit.
All right, well, there you go. There's the American justice system at work.
I have to ask you about one of the other important people in your life, because I love watching you with Anderson Cooper on New Year's Eve. How did that relationship start? You guys are so funny together.
You know, I just love him. And the way the relationship started is something that I am proud of, but he is not. He used to host The Mole. It was a show. It was a reality show, competition show called The Mole. It was on ABC. He hosted it for 2 seasons. In 2000, I had an MTV show called Kathy's So-Called Reality, very much ahead of its time. And what I did was I recapped reality shows. And at that time, they were still relatively new. It was like, you know, mostly it was Survivor and shows like that. So I, you know, got my team to get this guy who I knew from ABC World News Overnight. And he came on my MTV show twice, and my mom and dad were there, and he hit it off with them. And then my mom said, "You've got to behave around him, Kathleen. For God's sake, he's Gloria Vanderbilt's son. He's a Vanderbilt." So that gave me my inroad to tease him relentlessly. So our relationship is predicated on me making fun of him since 2000 or 2001. And then, of course, he went on to CNN. You know, we've just become friends over the years, and I love to make him laugh. And this year on CNN, we got the highest ratings we ever had, so I was very happy. And we were on the air for 3.5 hours solid, and we don't rehearse because he's scared of me. I'm just going to say it. He's scared of me. And he just says, "I'll see you on the platform."
You're used to being on stage, obviously, but 3.5 hours is a long time without too much planning.
Well, I'm not the one that's nervous about it. It's CNN that gets nervous. So every year they try to, they actually don't ask me to hold back as much as they used to. When I started, they had all these words I couldn't say, and please don't make fun of this person and that person. And now I've just basically beaten them down. So they pretty much just say, you know, if you can just not curse, we're happy.
That's a pretty decent, you know, benchmark to hit.
Yes, but I also feel that next year, if I wanted to be an all-nude broadcast, they should simply say thank you.
It's too cold.
Well, I know, but anything to get Anderson to take his clothes off. I mean, if it's cold, that's his problem, not mine.
I think that might break Twitter once and for all.
There you go. There you go. And Schenectady, you are no stranger to the cold weather, so... I would love nothing more than to surprise Anderson next year and say, guess what? We're not going to be in Times Square. We're going to be live on the roof of the Proctors, naked for 3.5 hours on CNN. Are you with me?
You have to give a preview of that at your show in April.
Oh, I'm happy to. I mean, I'm hoping that there can be a Facebook campaign. You know, you got to have an edge in television. And I just think that if CNN would be willing to do the rooftop nude CNN New Year's with Kathy and Anderson from the Proctor's Theater, you know, people will talk about it.
I wanted to ask you while I have you one more question about your career. You were in Pulp Fiction, which went on to be, you know, one of the most important movies of its era. Did you know at the time you were in, you know, something so cool and something that had become so important?
Well, first of all, Ian, don't get it twisted. I basically carried that film to win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival.
No question.
So I believe it's 3 lines in Pulp Fiction, which feel free to YouTube and enjoy seeing my old nose. Yes, I actually knew that movie was a big deal because Quentin Tarantino, who I was actually seeing at the time, he had just had a huge success with Reservoir Dogs. But the real story that your listeners may enjoy is that when he was writing Pulp Fiction, he would call me late at night, and he would read scenes. And he'd say, "Let me run this by you." And, of course, I never gave him a critique. I just listened. But even then, and I mean I was living in a single studio apartment in Santa Monica. I'm not kidding. I think my rent was $319 a month. And I was temping, and I was just trying to be an actress. And Quentin Tarantino would call me and say, hey, I just wrote this scene. And I remember just sitting there, you know, and I don't really know the movie business, but I remember sitting there thinking, God, that's good dialogue. And what was interesting is when I went to the screening of Pulp Fiction, it was amazing how little the dialogue had changed from when he first wrote it. You know, like, he's such a strong writer, he doesn't have to sit there and rewrite things a million times. And I always remembered that.
I think it's one of the surprising things when you rewatch the movie. You're like, oh, there's Kathy Griffin.
If you need someone to go to court, I will be glad to help, okay? That guy was a drunken maniac. He hit you, and then he crashed into that car.
Who?
Him.
Well, what happened was, I also was in his episode of ER, and I also was in this movie he did, a part of a movie called Four Rooms. Is he really is a comedy file, and he really loves funny people. And so when I was in the Groundlings comedy troupe, and he was casting Pulp Fiction, he actually cast five comedy people, including the guy who played the Gimp. I mean, that guy is a comedic actor.
Kathy Griffin, when you're in our city here, you're coming to Schenectady in April, it's only going to be like your latest jaunt out into the country. You are on stage all the time, and you have comedy specials all the time. How do you come up with so much new stuff?
No, it's how can I not keep coming up with more stuff? So after being inducted into the Guinness Book of World Records for a record-breaking 20 televised stand-up specials.
Congratulations.
I cannot hit the stage fast enough. I mean, with everything going on in politics, local news, national news, pop culture, scripted shows, reality shows, changing media, but more importantly, just human behavior, just the way that everybody catches everything on a cell phone camera, everything is online in 2 seconds, nobody even wants to read a newspaper anymore. I mean, all of it is like the perfect storm for comedy. So truly, the question is, you know, I'm almost going through my material so quickly, I cannot wait to get to the next live show. And that is the truth. And I know it sounds corny, but live shows are my first love. They always will be. No rules, uncensored. I cannot wait to hit the stage at Proctor's.
All right. Do you feel like you're, with all your recent successes, off the D-list now once and for all?
Moments. I mean, I think we all have moments, maybe even throughout the day, when we feel like we're on the D-list. I mean, trust me, I'll be at the airport somewhere going to the Schenectady show, and somebody will say, I love you, Kathy Lee Gifford. And then, you know, I'll have an A-list moment where I win a Grammy. I go back and forth. I my letters switch up on a daily or hourly basis.
Well, we're rooting for you. Wherever you end up, it's okay. It's Kathy Griffin. She'll be at Proctor's in Schenectady, Saturday, April 12th at 8 o'clock. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the roundtable, and thank you for bringing your mom with you. That was a great surprise.
Well, thank you. It was our pleasure. All right, say goodbye to Ian, Mom.
Bye, Ian.
Goodbye, Maggie.
All right, thanks, Ian.
C'est la vie, c'est the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.